Isaiah Thomas, I think when we start saying top 25 players, I take into account his effect on winning and losing. You know, Isaiah is a phenomenal scorer. Offensively, he is a terrific player. Now, the big question is, can you build a team around him and be successful and go deep into the playoffs? I don't know, because he really doesn't have an impact as a small player on the defensive end. You know, he's a scorer, first and foremost.
Rick Bucher. He does one thing. He scores. Now, he does that phenomenally well, and he does it phenomenally well for a guy of his size. But for me, if we're talking top 25 players in the league right now, I don't care if you're averaging 35, 40, whatever, you have to be able to impact the game in more ways than that.
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher.
Welcome to the 29th episode of the BJ and Bucher podcast, Four Quarters of Madness. I'm Rick Bucher. He's BJ Armstrong. Before we get started, BJ, I just want to send my condolences. I think we both do to the family of Fab Melo, who tragically died at the very young age of 26. We don't know the details. He was down in Brazil, Boston Celtics draft pick. But I know that you and the Wasserman Media Group actually worked with him at one point. So this has to hit close to home.
It really does. And our thoughts and prayers are with, you know, the Melo family. And as you mentioned, we did have an opportunity, and I personally had an opportunity to work with him. And he was just a very sweetheart of a young man. He was always kind, always had, you know, something to say. And he was just had a great sense of humor. You know, everyone loved Fab, but our prayers are definitely with him and his family at this time.
So we have a packed show, and we're going to have to go rapid fire here. One of the reasons it's packed is because we caught up with Jason Williams, the former Nets and Philadelphia 76ers power forward.
Yes.
Everybody's heard about his travails. We caught up with him and found out what he's up to next. And the interview was so exciting that it's a little bit longer than usual.
One of the best.
Yes.
It's one of the best.
Easily one of the best we've had on the podcast so
Absolutely.
Far.
Absolutely.
But there's other news to get to. We're in the first quarter, so let's get to it. Number one, your man, Draymond Green. Phenomenal against the Memphis Grizzlies. He has a triple-double. However, he does it without scoring any points. He has 12 rebounds.
Just say it again, Rick. Say it again. It sounds so good to me. Say it again, Rick.
It's amazing. Triple-double, but does it without scoring double-digit points. He has 12 rebounds, 10 assists, 10 steals. And this is what I think was overlooked. You and I have talked a little bit about this. I feel in some ways the triple-double has almost been devalued because
right.
of the way the game's
right.
played, and that the quad nickel,
ooh.
Which is having...
Did you coin that phrase?
Actually, I don't know that I did, but I'm saying I did now. The quad nickel is five or more in four different categories. And what I like about it is, one, it is rare, and two, to get it, you have to have a defensive influence. And so while he had the alternative triple-double, as Shane Freeman, our producer, calls it.
The alternative. I like that. Oh, you and Shane are
yes.
hot today. I love it.
I know. They're always throwing that kind of political innuendo in on the show.
The alternative triple-double. Wow,
yeah.
I love that. Okay, guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those alternative facts, baby. Alternative
hey, Shane.
Facts.
Shane, I'm with you when you're right.
But here's the thing. Shane didn't mention the fact that he also had five blocked shots.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I left that out.
So
he did get the quad nickel.
So how about this? So he has the quad nickel because he has the five blocked shots. He has five plus assists. He has five plus rebounds and has five plus steals. And he was 1 point away from the unicorn-like quintuple nickel, which is five plus in five different categories. And again, the reason that I think that is so valuable is because you could do all your work on a triple-double today at one end of the floor.
Right.
Assist, points, and offensive rebounds. For you to get a quad nickel, you have to get blocks or steals. You have to have some sort of defensive category in which you are dominating. And that's why I feel as if that's important, especially to a guy like Draymond Green or Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, we see some of the guys that are really versatile
right.
in this league, and they're the ones who are putting up quad nickel numbers. And it's because they are those versatile guys who were doing it at both ends of the court.
As you know, Rick, for many years, when we discuss things, I'm not big on numbers. I'm not big on this guy got 30 or you know, 35 points. I'm big on winning. And that evening when I spoke to Draymond after the game, I just let him know that that was perhaps one of the five greatest games I've ever witnessed because he didn't score.
Yeah.
And in the end, as a player, you want to have an effect and you want to contribute to the bottom line. The bottom line is winning. We can talk about the numbers and the statistics and all of the things. His contribution to winning and what he did throughout the entire game and his effect on the game was amazing, incredible, whatever, however you want to describe it. So I'm just happy that I had an opportunity to watch that game. But more importantly, for all the young kids out there, you don't have to score to be the best player on the floor.
Yeah.
You can do other things. And that was that to watch how he's dedicated himself to winning. He's not worried about points scored. He's not worried about averages, all-star appearances. He's worried about one thing, winning games. So if there's anything for the young kids to watch, and if you have an opportunity, coaches and young people talking about selflessness and all those things, watch this game because Draymond Green exemplified what it means to be a participant and a member of a team.
Well said. Last thing we want to discuss in the first quarter is the Charles Oakley, James Dolan, tiff, controversy, whatever you want to call
this
it.
This is really disturbing to me on a lot of levels.
Quick background sketch of what's transpired. Charles Oakley and James Dolan have had disagreements in the past. Charles Oakley has been critical of the Knicks. James Dolan, the owner of the Knicks and of executive chairman of Madison Square Garden, where they play, has taken exception to those criticisms, as he has with anybody who has been critical of the Knicks. Charles Oakley bought a ticket and showed up at the Clippers-Knicks game, had a seat several rows away from Dolan, and was in his seat for about 4 minutes before security came over and told him that he had to leave. Oakley had some issues with that. The physical altercation transpired, and he was essentially dragged out of Madison Square Garden, and now James Dolan is saying that he is banned. I'll give you my short nail sketch on my thumbnail sketch on what transpired, and there's a distinction here. James Dolan, the owner, is very much at fault. Just from a business standpoint, it's bad business. Charles Oakley is revered in New York. He's a former Knick. He has said repeatedly that Dolan has not acknowledged his presence. He has tried to speak with Dolan. Dolan will not shake his hand. That is outrageous behavior in my mind. And knowing Oak as I do, I have every reason to believe that. And knowing him and Dolan, I have every reason to believe that that's true. It's outrageous behavior. It's bad. It's simply bad business on Dolan's part. And the way that the incident was handled the other night, I think, was bad business. And I would expect that the other owners would look at James Dolan now with his history of other events and take the same action and same position that they did with Donald Sterling. You are bad for our business. You are a bad business partner. And you are... You have lost your right to be in our club of owning an NBA team because this is you're making us all look bad. This isn't just the Knicks. This isn't just you. This isn't just Charles Oakley. We all look bad as a result. The owners have to take action on this.
I agree with what you said.
Wait a minute. Say that again. Yeah, because I don't always hear that. Shane, did you hear that?
I agree.
Can we get that?
I agree. I'm going to put this, I agree with you, because I know, Rick, how much you and I both love the game of basketball. One of the great fans was the gentleman who was there when they were the Washington Bullets, the heckler. I can't think of his name. Robin would say some of the most outrageous things ever.
I loved when he read from Michael's book.
They were personal, but it was without humor, Rick, I don't know how you get through life.
Yeah.
And after the game, I always appreciated Robin would stay there, whether you were winning, beating the Washington Bullets at the time by 30, or you were losing by 30. He would always stay there, and he would always have a kind word to say to you and the team, whoever spoke to him after the
really?
Game, because it was
really?
Humor.
I don't think people were ever aware of that.
I always respected that, and that's why I love talking trash to this day, is because within the trash,
yes,
there is humor.
Yes.
And that's why it's funny, and that's what makes it great.
Yeah.
because it's not personal. Mm-hmm. It's just you talking to one another. What I don't understand.
You're cracking jokes on each other is what you're doing.
Exactly. And that's what people don't understand about, you know, when people are talking trash. The visual that I saw Charles Oakley being carried out by the security is not one that I couldn't find any humor in.
No, I agree.
I couldn't find any humor. I couldn't find anything positive. I don't care what was done, who was said. There was nothing humorous about the situation because you and I know Charles and we know him personally, unlike some of our listeners. Charles is a good man.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And I don't know what happened. I don't know what was said prior to all this. I just wish there was a way that James and Charles could have at least had an opportunity to speak, because that situation wasn't going to help anyone. It wasn't going to help the Knicks. It's not going to help the league. It's not going to help Oakley. Yeah. It's not going to help Dolan. No one is going to win. It's not going to help the fans. I just wish it didn't have to come to that, because that there was something I didn't want to see. I don't want to have to explain to my kids. But more importantly, you know, Charles means a lot to the city of New York and what he's done for that organization. And you can't take that away. And for the life of me, I can't figure out what happened that it got to that point where actually you're carrying out a warrior. All the guys that know Charles love this guy, love this man. And to see that was just, it was just, on so many levels. And that's just not the visual that I wanted to see for my friend or for the NBA.
And we know how difficult, you know how difficult it is, because you really are marrying something that you love, which is the game, with a business that we recognize. I mean, look, the reason we have this podcast, the reason that, you know, reason we make the money that we do is because of the game. And so you acknowledge that when you are taking something that you love, that you have a passionate about,
right,
is pure, and you're marrying it with commerce, it's always going to get tricky. But like, respect, there is a way. You just have to be, conscious of that fact.
And yeah.
What I saw the other night is like, just, I don't know what that is. That's not respecting the game or the business.
Game.
That's bad for both.
The game.
Yeah. This is a perfect transition because, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, we have Jason Williams, former 76ers and Nets power forward, got into some trouble with a tragic event with his chauffeur. He's now in treatment down in Florida. He has he's sober for, I believe, over a year. And the reason I say this is a perfect transition into our second quarter, and this is the first time we've ever done this. This is how good this interview was, is that we're giving it actually two quarters on the show. We usually save our guests for the fourth quarter. We're going to play part of the interview in the second quarter and then the second part in the fourth quarter. But Jason Williams is in recovery. Listen to him and how he talks about recovery, and he talks about where he is in his life. And then go back and look at James Dolan and his talk about his recovery, because he's supposedly 21 years sober and has written and bragged about that in a letter to a fan, suggesting that that fan was an alcoholic or had issues. He also made the same claim, Dolan did, about Charles Oakley. It's a starkly different mindset and approach by two people in recovery. And I'll be honest, in listening to Jason at 1 year of sobriety, at 1 year of recovery, he sounds far more balanced and sane and recovered than the man who claims to have 21 years. But here's the second quarter, and this is the start of our conversation with Jason Williams. BJ, please explain how it is that we're having Jason on the program, because I believe you two ran into each other just recently.
Well, I mean, you know, we have a mutual friend, Leah Wilcox, who I know we both admire from afar. She kept saying, you got to call Jason. You got to call Jason. And Jason and I have been knowing each other for many years, and it's our pleasure. And I've admired him from afar when he first came in this league, what he's been able to accomplish. And I'm just very happy that he was, you know, he took the opportunity and took the time to come on our show and just kind of want to catch up to see where he's going, what he's doing. I know he's got something planned here. So again, I just want to really welcome you to our show and thanks again for taking the time.
Hey, Rick, you know already, BJ's already telling a fib. He owes me about $8,000, and that's how I had to track him down.
Well, I thought it was really 10. Hey, but you, I see you can forgive on your old age.
Hey, man, hey, I appreciate you guys having me on the show. But before we get started, you know, I don't do much media anymore, but I just want to, for my fans and for the audience and for the people that are listening, I just want to apologize for all the pain that I've caused to the Christophe family, to my family, to the NBA family, to people who counted on me. And I take full accountability for my actions, and I'm sorry for it. And I can't say that enough. And I'm just starting to do a little media here and there because I have some issues that I think that might help some people in the near future. So this is here why I'm doing some and doing your show. And BJ, you know I love you. And Rick, me and you go back as well.
Yes,
so
we do.
I just wanted to take that time to say I apologize and I'm truly sorry for the way I acted. And at some points, you know, almost acted like a coward. So please forgive me. And people, please forgive me. I'm just trying to be better.
So anybody who wants to go back and review the details of everything that happened and went through, all of that is out there for consumption. What I'm really curious about and have been since BJ first said that we might have the opportunity to have you on the show is, where are you now and what are you doing these days?
Well, about 13 months ago, Rick, I came down to Florida. I had an alcohol problem along with an Ambien problem. I couldn't sleep for about 8 or 9 years, just mostly because of my own actions. And then as far as my alcohol went, you know, I'm an alcoholic, you know, for many years. And I have a disease that tells me I don't have a disease. Hmm. And it took me until I got to this age to sit back and say, you know what? You know, I got to go down and separate myself and get better and take as much time as I can. So about 13 months ago, I came down to a place called Epiphany in Florida. I met a young man named Greg Goins, who's great with the 12-step program. I was coming down for 30 days, and I ended up doing some volunteer work. And here I am 13 months later, and I'm still in treatment and still volunteering and still letting other people help me get better by letting them pretend that I'm helping them, if I could say that in that way.
So as you, I'm just curious, as you look back now, there's two questions here that I have for you. The first is, just where do you think it went sideways? You know, we know all the details of prison and all of that, but I'm wondering, when you look all the way back, where do you think it first turned?
I think it turned. That's a good question. I think it started. I had a lot of time to think about it. As you said, I was in prison, and I have a lot of time to think about all my actions. And I think it's when the crew of people that I hung out with. You know, I had a good crew when I started, and then, you know how it goes, BJ, when you're in the limelight every day. As you start playing bad, and the people, instead of telling you to go home, they know you picking up the tab at the end of the night. They said, oh, man, you're not playing that bad. You know, right. And, you know, you can go out. And just for an example, when I got down here to go to treatment, I was 316 pounds, you know, and now I'm weighing in about 260. You know, so, you know, it's just where nobody sat down and go, oh, Jay, man, you're 50 pounds overweight. You look terrible. Hmm. You know, and so sometimes you can be looking at the mirror 2 inches from the mirror and really not see yourself because you're too close. I just surrounded myself with people who didn't have my best interests at heart. And I blame myself. I don't blame the people for that. Hmm. I blame myself. But the people that told me to go home, I told them, you know what? You know, you go home. I'm going to go out with these new cats. And you go out with these new cats. Hmm. And then what happened is, they bring some new cats, and then they bring some new cats. Now you in a whole new entourage of people that you don't know. And all of a sudden, BJ, they're all chicken heads. You know, they just pluck, pluck, pluck. Chicken all, you know, picking on everything they go after. So I put myself in a bad situation. I pushed away the people that I love and the people that kept me accountable. And without structure, for me comes destruction. I totally have to have a regimen. I really got to go out every morning, even right now with my new regimen. I have to find something in the morning to humiliate myself so I can surrender my ego and go out and help somebody who I think I'm helping, but they're really helping me. So I'm down here, and people say, well, Jay, you pick up the clients, you know, from the airport, and you bring them back, and you spend time with them. But see, I'm not helping them. They're helping me, because when I pick them up and they're in a wheelchair, they're doggone just about blind. They just took their last hit or whatever they had, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
I look at them on that 2-hour drive when I got to pull over because they're hot, they're cold, they're throwing up. And it says that I say to myself, wow, that was me. Hmm. I never want to go back that way.
Hmm.
So I have to find that humiliates me to take me to a place where I can surrender myself to my higher power, which is God. And just know that if I don't treat my addiction every day, because there's no cure for this, I'm going to have problems. So for the last 13 months, coming on 13 months, on the 27th, I celebrated 1 year on the 27th of last month, and just been going strong. I take it one day at a time. You know, for me, it's one breath at a time. So, you know, I have a good crew in the morning. BJ, I wake up every morning right about 4 o'clock, 4:44. I'm in the gym with Sean Nassif and Jerry and my trainer Billy, and you know, I got an MMA fighter, a football player, a trainer, and we're going hard for about an hour and a half. That releases my anxiety. I don't have to worry about getting back to the gym and taking care of myself. I get my devotion, and I get my and I just take care of myself first in the morning, and then I go out and let the world take care of me.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right, guys, this is Shane. This is the Halftime Break on the BJ and Bucher podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed that tidbit of the interview that we had with Jason Williams. You'll hear the rest of it in the fourth quarter. But we have a special song for you guys today, and today's halftime music is brought to you by Special Ed. This is a classic from BJ's archive, and this is Special Ed and his song, I Got It Made.
I'm your idol, the highest title, numero uno. I'm not a Puerto Rican, but I'm speaking so that you know. And understand I got the gift of speech, and it's a blessing. So listen to the lesson I preach. I talk sense condensed into the form of a poem. Full of knowledge from my toes to the top of my dome. I'm kinda young, but my tongue speaks maturity. I'm not a child, I don't need nothing for security. I get paid when my record is played, to put it short. I got it made.
I got it made.
I got it made. I'm outspoken, my language is broken into a slang, but it's just the dialect that I select when I hang. I play it cool, cause fooling is all that I'm about. Just fooling with the girlies, yes, and busting it out. I'm special ed, and you can tell by the style that I use. I'm creatively superior, yo. I never lose, I never lost, cause I'm the boss, and never will, cause I'm still the champion. Chief one won't lose until I choose, which I won't, cause I don't retreat. I run you over like a truck and leave you dead in the street. You're inviting me a titan to a battle. Why? I don't need your respect, cause I got it made.
Got it made.
I'm talented, yes, I'm gifted. Never boosted, never shoplifted. I got the cash, but money ain't nothing. Make $1 million every record that I cut, and my name is Special Ed, and I'm a super duper star. Every other month I get a brand new car. Got 20, that's plenty, yet I still want more. Kinda find a Honda scooter's got 74. I got the riches to fulfill my needs. Got land in the sand of the West Indies. Even got a little island of my very own. I got a frog, a dog with a solid gold bone. An accountant to account the amount I spent. Got a treaty with Tahiti cause I own 1%. Got gear outwear for every day. Boutiques from France to the USA. And I make all the money from the rhymes I invent. So it really doesn't matter how much I spent. Because yo, I make fresh rhymes daily. You burn me? Really? Think, just blink, and I've made 1 million rhymes. Just imagine if you blink 1 million times. Damn, I'd be paid. I got it made.
All right, time in the podcast that everybody enjoys, except maybe the two guys who are actually directly involved in it. That would be BJ and myself. It's the third quarter. It's time to challenge our trivia knowledge. Here we go. BJ, I set the NBA record for defensive rebounds in a single game by snagging 29 of them. Who am I? Dennis Rodman, Shaquille O'Neal, Wilt Chamberlain, or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
I'm just going to say Dennis Rodman.
And that would be incorrect. And I would probably say the same thing. Actually, this is, once again, Shane Freeman, our producer, getting tricky. It's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yes. Wow. No, yes. I never
would. Yeah, that would have been the last pick, right? Maybe?
The cap, that's a good one. That's a good one. You know what?
Set the
record. Shout out to the captain.
Set the record on December 14th, 1975 against the Detroit Pistons. Your Detroit Pistons. Leading
Say
the
it again.
Your Detroit Pistons.
Yeah.
Leading the law. Detroit basketball. Leading. That was against the Detroit Pistons. Leading the Los Angeles Lakers to a 110-100 victory. All right. What do you got?
All right. Here we go. I hold the NBA record for having the most rebounds in a half.
Oh, God.
Who am I? Bill Russell, Moses Malone, Dennis Rodman, Happy Hairston.
I've never seen Happy Harrison's name anywhere. throwing in that damn wrinkle, man.
Hey, you know, I got to do what I do.
But you know what? In this case, I think that's a red herring. I'm not going to go with crazy name. I want to be in Shane's head right now. I can't be in Shane's head right now. Give me the other three names again.
Oh, give God. Okay, he's looking it
no,
up.
No,
he's
no,
looking
no,
it
no,
up.
No, no, no,
Bill Russell, Moses Malone, Dennis Rodman, Happy Harrison.
Well, Moses did most of his work rebounding at the offensive end. Dennis Rodman.
No, it says I hold the NBA record for having the most rebounds in
total.
A half.
Total. Not. I mean, I thought it was defensive rebounds. So it's just rebounds in a half. I'm going to say Moses.
Bill Russell, on November 16th, 1957, he set the NBA single-game record for most rebounds in a half by snagging 32 boards in a 111-89 win over the Philadelphia Warriors.
Wow, okay. All right. So we're...
Shane's winning for sure.
Yes, he is. We're both losing. Hey. He's winning.
Hey.
I hold the NBA record for the most rebounds in a quarter with 18.
Oh,
who am I? Charles Barkley, Larry Smith, Nate Thurmond, or Ben Wallace?
I'm just going to go with Mr. Mean because I want to say his name. Mr. Mean.
Larry Smith.
Larry Smith.
That would be incorrect.
I just wanted to say his name.
Hey,
I love
it. Hey, at this point, if you're not going to win, you should at least have fun, right?
That's a great name.
Mr. Mean. It was Nate Thurmond on February 28, 1965, as a member of the San Francisco Warriors. He set the NBA single quarter rebounding record versus the Baltimore Bullets. All right, what do you got for me? This is my chance.
Okay, we share the NBA record for the most offensive rebounds in a single quarter. Who are we? Charles Barkley and Dennis Rodman? Larry Smith and Dennis Rodman? Charles Barkley and Larry Smith? I'll say this again while you're thinking. We share the NBA record for the most offensive rebounds in a single quarter. Who are we? Charles Barkley and Dennis Rodman? Larry Smith and Dennis Rodman? Or Charles Barkley and Larry Smith?
I am going to say Larry Smith and Dennis Rodman.
That is incorrect. It is Charles Barkley and Larry Smith. They shared this record with 11 each.
All right. Okay. So we need a tiebreaker.
I got you. All right, this is going to be a good one. I'm only going to do one tiebreaker today, so this is your only chance to win this thing, but here goes. All right, I was the last person to hold the NBA rebounding title for 6 years straight. Who am I? A, Kevin Garnett. B, Dennis Rodman. C, Dwight Howard. Or D, Dikembe Mutombo.
Say that. What's the question again?
Wait a minute. Now, because we got into this with the scoring thing. So they've won the rebounding title
six years in a row. Yes.
And it was Kevin Garnett, Dwight Howard, Dennis Rodman, and Dikembe Mutombo.
I'm just going to say Dwight Howard.
I would say Dwight Howard.
Yeah, that would be incorrect for both of you guys. Actually, the person who holds it is Dennis Rodman, and he did it from 1992 through 1998. Very, very, very amazing record.
All right. Hey, It ends up in a tie, and the tie goes to Shane, the producer.
Hey, I won.
There you go.
So, oh, man.
I'm going to call him the reducer.
Yeah. Yeah. No, hey, no kidding. Reduce the respect for our trivia knowledge on a weekly basis with this podcast. Bad, that's for sure. Bad. Well, whatever we lost in your respect, I hope we will gain it back with the fourth quarter, which is more of Jason Williams going to story time in the NBA. I'm retelling these stories now because they were really good. His past, but also some of the things that he experienced in the NBA. Here, fourth quarter, more of Jason Williams.
Jason, the one thing is, you know, when we come in this league as, you know, as young men, and you don't know really what to expect, and you come into this league, and can you share with us in the audience, what is the one thing that, if there's something you could change about this league or you could share with today's youth, what was it like for you then, knowing what you knew then when you came into this league, and what is the one thing you would say to a young Jason Williams who came into this league right out of college? What was the one thing now that you would say to your younger self about your story and things that you did?
Two words, Charles Barkley. I should have played in Phoenix. Let me tell you a story. I got drafted by Phoenix, and I've never been to Phoenix in my life. And all of a sudden, they said, well, the number 21st pick, you're going to Phoenix. I looked over, and there's nudging me, and Coach Connor Suckers nudging me. Because let me tell you this, BJ. So during the draft, they told my father I was going number 5. So my father was sitting there, and I'm sitting with Coach Connor Suckers, and my dad and mom were sitting behind me, and they go, number 5 is Alec Kessler. And I look back at my dad, he goes, don't worry about it, boy, you be next, right? So number 9 come up, you know, and they look up and say, don't worry about it, son, you be next. So we got to number 17, and the New York Knicks were picking him. My father heard New York, I played at St. John's University, so he knows for sure that I'm going to get picked right now. So they go, and the number 17 pick, it goes to Joe Newsom. And I look back at my father and I look forward and I did a double take and look back and he was telling my mama, see, Barbara, this song is they gonna never get dropped. That's a true story. So I get on a plane after refusing to go out to Phoenix. And I'm overheard saying, I ain't going out to Phoenix, a bunch of redneck pickup driving, no cheaper than I'm out having people and just ignorant stuff. I'm just lost, right? Right. And knowing Phoenix is not like that, there's great people out there. And I get off the plane and people are booing me. The governor doesn't want me there. And it's just a mess. So this is a true story. So I was so, and you asked me this question, and I don't think I've ever talked about this, but I was so intoxicated. And that when I got off the plane, my brother put me in a hotel room, and in my mind, I thought that I was on Soho Grand in Manhattan, overlooking Broadway.
Wow.
So when I woke up, I was butt naked. I opened up the curtains, and I look out, and all I saw was death. And I said, no! Oh, my God! They dropped the bomb! I'm going to see New York, not knowing I'm in Phoenix. So I'm running around the room, picking up the telephone. Hey, somebody get my dad. Is my mom all right? My dad all right? Buzzy. And then there's a knock at the door. Who is it? I open the door. I'm butt naked. I'm sweaty. And I look, and it's Jerry Colangelo and Todd Fitzsimmons, the coach and the owner of the Phoenix. And I said, hey, man, I grew up New York. And they look over and go, what is the George Wayne ass as we just drafted Cotton? And that is a true story.
Oh,
now,
God.
You take that, play that forward, Rick, and now you go to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Well, Charles Barkley wants to be on the team. And let me tell you something. Charles Barkley been getting a lot of heat lately. And I'm going to just tell you, I played with Charles for 2 years. And Charles is one of the best people you have ever met in your life.
Yes.
He has a great family, great wife, a great daughter. He's a family man. And just because he's in the public eye, he takes care of his family. Yeah. I've watched him do so much with so many people, with his money, with his time, that people don't see. So I just wanted to say that about Charles, because people have been going at Charles Barkley, and I just think he's a great human being. Now, that being said, let's talk about his practice efforts, right? So, B.J. Armstrong played with the greatest player to ever play, Michael Jordan. Yeah. I get drafted, I play with Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley would come to the practice, hungover, get on the bike, the stationary bike, and he'll take a pancake with a from McDonald's, syrup and butter, and before there even was a tortilla, he'll just wrap it up and then be on the bike and be going 1 mile an hour, spit, go, run the floor, you lazy sons of bitches. That's how we deal with the game. And pancakes be spitting out his mouth. So here we are. And Charles, the difference between Michael Jordan and Charles Barkley is that Michael Jordan would beat you up in practice, BJ, if you wasn't playing him hard enough.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Now Charles Barkley would beat you up if you was playing him too hard. You understand what I'm saying?
I got you. I got you.
So the worst thing you can ever do is to get drafted in your first 2 years to play with Charles Barkley. Great guy, great human being, bad role model when it comes to a rookie being there.
Wow. That's good stuff. Hey, before we forget, you have reboundinstitute.com, and the number is 877, the numeral 2, rebound. Tell us what that's about.
Well, now that I'm down here in Florida and I'm staying down here, I think I found my calling. It keeps me sober. Mm-hmm. It's getting my family back to me. Things are coming back slowly. I'm healthy again, and I just want to help people. Help me help others. So if you have some kind of problem, and most of the time we did the 60 minutes on, and I think you get it on Showtime Sports now. We did that, and we probably got hundreds of calls I did of people wanting to get treatment and not knowing where to go and how to get help. So, you know, I'm here. Some days we're not doing much around here. If I'm not doing outdoor adventure therapy with the clients, I'm not sitting in getting help. If I'm not at a meeting, if I'm not trying to do something, everything in this space, everything that I do right now is pretty much around me trying to stay sober. Mm-hmm. So if somebody has an issue out there and I can help them, just call that number or email me. And I'll be quite honest with you, it's going to take a minute for me to get to the email because I'm still one of the old school guys. But somebody who would read the email would call me and say, hey, Jay, you know, Rick, you know, needs to talk to you about me and you and him catching a meeting, right, Rick, when I'm in town.
Yep.
That's excellent.
Jason, thank you so much.
Hold on, man. We got some more stories to go.
Okay. All right. Hey, let it go. Don't let me get in the way.
So let me tell you something. So Charles Oakley comes down here. He's the one who got me into treatment. So he came down, they met with Greg Goins, and he says, hey, man, you know, this boy going to need help. And you was a black guy, and don't let me have to come back down here. I'm going to come back here in 30 days, and he better not be worse than when I left him. Oh, you know, and so he comes down and checks on me probably once every month. He comes down, he barbecues for the clients. He barbecues at the AA meetings.
I know that's good. Charles can really cook. Yeah, he can really cook.
Yeah, he can really cook, BJ, and he got the openisms, you know? So
yep.
He comes down, he buys this new Ferrari. This thing must cost like $700,000. We get in. And now we look like two clowns in a circus, two 6'10 guys, 7 foot in a contract year, but two 6'10 guys get in this car, and we're driving now, and he wants to show me, as the convertible is down, how he can call his nephew, LeBron James. So he hits this button, and I tell you right now, as far as IT goes, I'm the worst. So we're driving, and he looks over, and he goes, hits the button, he goes, call LeBron. You know, only like an Okanism. Call LeBron. And it comes back on Siri, whatever it is, and says, please repeat. You know, call LeBron. Please repeat. Call LeBron. Like, you know, Oak can't pronunciate or enunciate. Call LeBron. So it says, please slow down. So Oak got his foot on the gas. He downshifted. Call LeBron. Now, we're in a $700,000 sports car going down 95, about 30 miles an Unbelievable, man.
Hey, hey, since you brought that up, so we know.
Yeah, that's the truth. Like, hey, one more story. This is one of BJ's. He loves this story, right? So we're playing against. This is a Derek Coleman story, BJ. You remember this?
No, not the DC.
DC is the most talented forward I ever played with in my life. So we are playing against the Minnesota Timberwolves, and he goes up. He needs to make one free throw to tie the game, two to win. No time, about 1 second left on the clock. So we're sitting on the sideline. I just fouled out. And right before Derek goes to shoot, now Yanko Dare was the kid we drafted with the 7th pick. God bless his soul. He's up in the upper room right now. But he's from Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And he would only talk to me. He won't speak to anybody else on the team. So right before Derek goes to shoot, he goes, Jason. I go, not now, Yanko, not now. He goes, Jason. I go, Nick, Yanko, he's about to shoot, man. Let him. And because I see the 7 owners, we got 7 Jewish owners, they're sitting across from us, they're staring at the bench to see how we're acting because we're playing terrible with all this talent. We just had the most talented team, we just couldn't get it right. So he goes, I have one question. I go, what is it, Yanko? He goes, what does the C on Krista Leitner's jersey stand for? I'm like, bro, and it just looks over like, I can basically, he can hear this, and he's about to shoot the free throw, and he just shakes his head. Right? And he does another couple of bounces. And I go, I know what it stands for. You know? And it stands for captain, obviously. So I look over at Yanko. I go, Yanko, what do you think it stands for? And Yanko Dare goes, Caucasian? And she started. So the whole business cracks up and starts laughing.
He did say that.
You missed the free throw. So now they give Derek back. Now he got to make this other free throw. And now we got another rocket scientist at the other on the end of the bench named Benoit Benjamin. So Benoit Benjamin goes, woo-wee. He goes, that Yanko Dare sure is silly. Don't he know Caucasians starts with a K?
Oh, God. Oh, and you wonder why your team wasn't very good. Oh, my God.
Hey, man. Jason, we love you. You're always welcome here. Yes. And, hey, man, I really appreciate it. It's so great to hear that you're doing well. And if there's anything we can do here at the show for any of us, Rick or myself, man, you just call us and we love you so much. We really appreciate you taking the time.
All right. Thanks, Rick. I love you, BJ. I love you, Rick. Thanks, Shane. I appreciate y'all, man.
Jason, okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. Yep.
Thank you, buddy.
Hope you enjoyed all that you heard from Jason. Remember, if you're listening from iTunes, be sure to subscribe to the show. And rate and leave a review. Let us know what you think of the show and what we might do better. You can also check out our brand new website, bjandbuecher.com. We have a lot of stuff on there aside from the podcast, some written material by me and some other writers. Also, you can follow us on Twitter. It's @bjandbuecher. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll be back at you next week.